And our study was conducted in Providence, Rhode Island, and explored perceptions of PrEP acceptability, access, and predictive behaviors among male sex workers. This was a two-stage qualitative study, and we compared the perspectives of male sex workers with non-sex workers, but today I want to focus just on the findings among male sex workers. And I don't want to go over the background of PrEP, which I think was covered very well in the past presentations. I just would like to talk about what the literature tells us about PrEP acceptability. We're learning that individual factors such as risk perception and mental health make a difference. Medication-specific factors such as side effects and, of course, the challenges of adherence. And contextual factors such as how partners affect decisions, which I think these presentations before me have covered very nicely. So a growing number of studies have been done with men who have sex with men, but much less has been done on PrEP with male sex workers. Yet we know that this group is uniquely at risk for HIV. Some studies show that HIV prevalence is as high as 31% in this population. And there are a number of reasons for why they're at risk, but one of the most important is this idea of the risk premium. That's the idea that clients are willing to pay more for unprotected sex because it feels better. So this is especially an issue among street-based male sex workers who are most likely to engage in sex for survival needs. And we recruited from Providence. In many ways, Providence is a unique environment for studying this population. This is because indoor sex was legal until 2009. The city continues to have the only male bathhouses in all of New England. You can drive by the parking lot. You'll see license plates from Canada and elsewhere. And we also have good knowledge of this population because of Project Weber, which is run by co-author Rich Holcomb. It's an organization based in the community that does outreach and prevention services. And so far, we don't know a lot about how acceptable PrEP is among male sex workers in the U.S. There have been some studies in Canada and Kenya, but we're not sure how those findings would translate to this context. And also, there have been calls to investigate this. So in part, this research is an attempt to respond to those calls. So what did we do? We conducted 8 focus groups in 2012, and then we looked at the themes that were uncovered in the focus groups, and we conducted 31 in-depth interviews from 2013 to 2014. And today, I'm going to present data from both of the stages of the study. So you can see our inclusion criteria here. We used written agendas and explored the categories also shown on this slide. Participants reported unprotected anal sex and sex work in the past 6 months. And we recruited at various street venues throughout Providence where we know sex work is occurring. When we looked at the demographics of our sample, several factors stand out in relation to PrEP. First, 30% were homeless, and the vast majority, nearly 70%, were unemployed. And so it wasn't surprising that the men in our sample said that they access health care mostly through emergency rooms, through substance use clinics, and often also as well through jails. Most of our study sample identified as straight or bisexual. Thus, while most clients were men, male sex workers were most likely to have study partners that were female. We also looked at the behavioral characteristics of this sample, and the vast majority reported having sex with both men and women, with most of the study partners, again, being female. And they reported a range of partners, an average of 9 partners, but a large range, ranging from 2 to 150 partners in the past 6 months. And further down the slide, you can see the possible syndemic between sexual risk behaviors and alcohol, drugs, and violence, which Dr. Stahl has written a great deal about. One of the interesting features about this population was that many were also purchasing sex themselves, most often from women. So we found out that only 20% had heard of PrEP, and none had been offered PEP or PrEP in a healthcare setting. We also discovered that willingness to use PrEP was mixed. So the majority, about 60%, described interest in using PrEP, but 7% said they were maybe interested, and 29% expressed no desire to use PrEP. And this data, I think, highlights what other presenters have talked about, that not everyone wants PrEP, even after they get information on it. The biggest motivation for PrEP was perceived risk. We also discovered some unique drivers and motivations to get PrEP in this male sex worker sample. So, for example, participants told us that they wanted to protect their study partners from HIV because of their own engagement in sex work, or that they hope to get out of sex work in the future, and that if they were able to exit sex work, being HIV negative was important for, quote unquote, their normal lives. So let's take a look at what people said. I'll just highlight the quote on your bottom left. So this participant was talking about PrEP being acceptable to him, mostly because he was motivated out of concern for his romantic partner. He said, "PrEP puts me at very low risk. I probably dodged a bullet so many times, I don't know how many more chances I'm going to get. Maybe my romantic partner and I wouldn't have to worry so much about, like, using a condom and could be more intimate. With clients, I just feel like they expect sex without a condom. It's not even negotiable." Participants also highlighted some of the barriers for taking PrEP. There were some of the expected barriers, for example, cost, lack of health insurance, and poor access to health care. However, some of the barriers were unique to this population, including the fear of disclosing sex work and substance use to clinicians. When we probed about these fears about disclosing risk behaviors to clinicians, this is where we discovered something very interesting, and we're calling this the access interest paradox. Male sex workers, especially those engaged in street-based sex work, describe cycles of substance use and sobriety. Sex work often corresponded to periods of substance use. And so when substance use was worse and sex work was more frequent, men wanted to use PrEP, but they had poor access to PrEP. And this is because they were more likely to spend what little money they had on substances rather than healthcare. Participants also told us that they were more likely to feel shame and depression engaging in sex work and substance use, and they were especially fearful of going to clinicians during this time period. They were afraid, for example, that clinicians would discover the kind of damage that was done to their bodies, and they were also afraid of how clinicians would react to them saying that they were engaged in sex work. So let's look at some of the quotes that illustrate this. And before I read these, I should also say that the other side of the paradox is that when male sex workers were not using substances, they had a perception of lower risk. So they had less desire to use PrEP, but these were the time periods where they had better access. So I first want to highlight a quote that illustrates this period of high interest but low access to PrEP. This participant said, "When I'm out there chasing drugs, I'm putting myself at risk. I probably wouldn't have the means to pay for the drug PrEP. Do you know what I mean? If I had an extra $300, it's not going to preventative medicine. It's going to the Coke or something." And in contrast, other participants described good access to PrEP, but during these periods of good access, they had low perceived risk because they weren't engaged in substance use. They weren't engaged in sex work. So this participant said, that PrEP might open the door for him to go back into using substances and sex work. He said, "I had a checkup recently at a methadone clinic to quit using heroin. A government program funded me a 30-day detox. If I needed to, I would use PrEP, but I'm trying to get out of this mess. I don't want an excuse to make it more convenient for me to get high, you know?" We also asked participants to describe how PrEP might affect their behaviors. And again, this is predicted behaviors. I think that's an important caveat. Some male workers, sex workers, predicted that PrEP would increase their risk behavior, and this is widely known as risk compensation. However, others predicted that PrEP would have no effect on their behaviors. And even more interesting, others described that PrEP would result in decreased risk behavior. And this is what Albert Liu has described as the preventionist identity. So let's look at what men said. Let me highlight the quote on your top left. This participant described how he might engage in risky behaviors if he used PrEP. He said, "I probably have more sex, actually. I mean, you kind of feel like, whoa, nothing can bother me now, you know? I'd have more partners, because sometimes now you kind of hold back a little because you do think about HIV. But in contrast, here is a quote that illustrates perhaps this preventionist identity. The participant said, "You know, if I took PrEP, maybe I'd take care of myself in other ways. You're making an effort to better yourself, to make yourself safer, you know, so I would just want to start just being safer in general." So let me summarize. Not all male sex workers wanted PrEP, but there was interest. Risk for infection was very high in this population, but access to PrEP remains a challenge. One of the most interesting findings, of course, was this access-interest paradox. That is, at the times of highest perceived need, there was a desire for PrEP, but it was also very difficult because of fears of how clinicians react to actually go and access PrEP. And this was cyclical. So we're thinking that perhaps what these results suggest is that one approach might be to offer a combination of PEP and PrEP. So start with post-exposure prophylaxis to help combat some of the fatalism and shame that participants described, and then use PrEP for the remainder of the sex work cycle. This doesn't mean that we're not concerned about these periods of low perceived risk, and I emphasize perceived. Just because male sex workers had low perceived risk doesn't mean that they and their partners were actually at low risk for HIV. So we also need to think about how to deliver PrEP during these periods of low perceived risk, and just how, I think these findings also illustrate just how important it is to do outreach for HIV and substance use during these periods of use. Our findings also highlight that it might be too soon to tell what's happening with behavioral adjustment. We need to gather additional behavioral data, definitely from longitudinal studies, and this will give us a better idea of how PrEP might actually impact behaviors as it's rolled out, and whether or not risk compensation occurs, or even the preventionist identity and how that kind of plays out. We recognize some of the limitations. Some of these include, of course, that we focused on street-based male sex workers, so this might not be generalizable to internet escorts. The participants were mostly white, not gay identified, and we focused on self-reported data. But regardless of these limitations, our findings highlight that we need to develop interventions to support male sex workers. We also need to further study how to roll out PrEP. So some of our findings suggest that we could also perhaps implement PrEP on a cyclical basis, and we need to study this more. And certainly, our findings also suggest that we need to work with healthcare providers to develop strategies for how they communicate and interact and explain PrEP, and how they might even go into the community to reach out to this population. So I'd like to close by thanking the study participants, generous funding from NIMH, and our community partner, Project Weber, and we don't have any conflicts.
Okay, I want to thank our panel. We still have a few minutes for questions, if anyone has any.
I know that in Rhode Island, something that's unusual is the collaboration between researchers and kind of the prison staff and the population that is cycling through jails and prisons. And I think in Rhode Island, you know, there's been a lot of work on that, and it'd be excellent, I think, state to try to study some of that in because it's so small and streamlined. But the population is incredibly needy, and I think that services that help in transition would be vital. And this is a great idea, so I hope to see more of that.
Any other questions? All right, well, thank you all for coming, and thank you to our panel again.